everyone. Thanks for tuning into this week's message. My name is Gregory, and I'm part of the team here at Friends Church. Everything we do around here depends 100% on the generous donations of our local and online communities. That's people just like you who believe that life really is about leaving a positive mark on our world. So if you love what Friends Church is up to, I'd like to encourage you to contribute by going to friendschurch.ca. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
You guys probably know me a little bit by now, and you know that cars aren't really one of my values. So I've been driving a crappy old 1992 Mitsubishi right-hand drive Pajero. Can you see that thing? It sometimes starts. It's kind of nice. As soon as the temperature drops below about 15 degrees, I start panicking. There was a whole time I left for a holiday, like for a weekend in Manitoba. I parked at the airport and it dropped to minus 30. Yeah, that didn't go well at all. There was like three booster cables and yeah, just it's a mess. It's basically a crappy car, but it was cheap. And I've kind of limped it along for about 10 years now. It gets me where I want to go, goes ice climbing with me, takes my motorbike where I want to go. And so on Monday when I was driving down Deerfoot, thinking everything was fine, until the cluster of all, you know, the red lights that are not supposed to be on your dash, they all fired up at once. The temperature gauge went like this. Bam! So what do you do when you're driving down? Now, I was going to say, what do you do when you're driving down Deerfoot fast? It doesn't go fast. It barely goes 110. But I'm going down this thing 110, people are flying by me, and suddenly my truck is dying. You know, there's smoke billowing out of the front of the thing. So I swerve through traffic and slam it into the side of the road. There was a few F-bombs. Not above getting angry at my car now and again. I open the hood, billowing smoke. You know on the rad cap where it says, do not open when hot? Just ignore that. So I got a blanket out of the back of my truck, put it over the rad cap, opened the rad cap, because, you know, I figured I'd put a little bit more coolant in and, you know, I'll get home. If you'd have driven by Deerfoot just before 16th Ave at about 8 o'clock on that day, you'd have seen an old white dude running like mad to avoid the spraying geyser of coolant that flew out of that truck and covered everything. Me, my jacket, in my hair. Just a quick fact, coolant is actually sweet tasting when you taste it. It's also poisonous, which is awesome. Anyone else been stranded on the side of the road? Not a great feeling, is it? But today I want to open it wider. It's not just crappy cars, side of the road. You know, it's getting laid off. It's getting a relationship falling apart. Health problems. We're kind of standing on the side of the road of life and going, like, now I can't get out of this myself. We need help, right? We all have moments in our lives, in our, you know, the years of our lives when we've needed help. You can always feel it because it's a really emotional time, isn't it? You feel helpless. You feel a loss of something. Sick. You get that sick feeling in your stomach. And you're just desperate. Desperate for someone to come along and just give you a hand up. It's all you need. Just sit with that feeling for a second. The heart of this message comes from this place. That if you go back through your life, there will be times when you needed help. Okay, hold that thought, but I'll come back, okay? Jeff started us on a series called, I don't actually know what he called it, but it's about this idea of wisdom, kind of one size fits all wisdom, like, you know, don't open your rad cap when it's overheated. That's like, but there's post-conventional wisdom that says something is unique about our situation that means we can do things differently. So today I want to share a story with you guys that I think gets at this idea of post-conventional wisdom. It's not just one size fits all. It's something deeper than that. And to do it, I want to share a story that Jesus was said to have told. And we're guessing he told lots of stories. This is one of the ones that was written down and saved for the last 2,000 years. So just let me go through it with you guys. For the kingdom of heaven is like the landowner who went over. So let me just back up. Kingdom of heaven, think of that as this utopian idea that Jesus has that he wants the world to be. In Jesus' fashion, he never just tells us what it is. Wouldn't that have been a lot easier? Kingdom of heaven looks like A, B, and C. You know, this happens and this happens. He always tells stories, and most of the stories are kind of ambiguous. You can't quite figure them out. But it's this idea of this utopian world that we want to create is like a landowner who went out early one morning to hire workers for his vineyard. Now, for you, that just seems normal, right? The idea of the landowner going one morning to hire his vineyard is like the highest CEO of an oil company going down to train, you know, the mail clerk. So already there's something weird going on in this story. So he says this kind of high-end person who owns everything goes and hires the workers. He kind of goes to the bottom of the pile to hire some people. And he says this, he agreed to pay them a normal daily wage and sent them out to work. That idea of normal daily wage is called a denarius. It was kind of like food for 3 to 4 days. They didn't have a whole lot of banking institutions back then. Everything is kind of measured in food, right? We work, we eat. We don't work, we starve. So what it's saying is, there's this idea that this guy goes out and he hires people and it's fair. What he says is, look, you're going to work and I'm going to pay you a fair wage. So that's the setting. Can you go to the next slide for me? At 9 o'clock in the morning when he was passing through the marketplace, he saw some people standing around doing nothing. Doing nothing is a bit pejorative, folks. That seems like, you know, vagrants just like not wanting to work. It's probably not what it means. It's more the sense of they're waiting to see if someone's going to hire them for day labor because most people were day laborers there. So he hired them, telling them he would pay them whatever was right at the end of the day. Now, remember, he goes first thing in the morning, he hires some people, regular wage. This is kind of like he goes for coffee at 9 o'clock when he's, you know, started his day already, and he sees more workers, and there's a sense of like, well, what are you guys doing here? And so he hires them. So the first ones maybe were hired at 7 o'clock in the morning. Now he's hired a group at 9. So he went to work at the vineyard, and at noon again, and at 3 o'clock, he did the same thing. So this is this weird idea of throughout the day, he's running into workers that need work. And he hires them. And he always says, I'll pay you something fair. So now we have this situation that there's workers that started, you know, first thing in the morning, 2 hours later, 2 hours later, 2 hours later, 2 hours later. Can you go to the next slide for me, please? At 5 o'clock in the afternoon, quitting time was 6. So an hour before quitting time, he goes into town again, check the mail, whatever he's doing. I don't know what he's doing. And he saw some more people standing around. Again, standing around is kind of rude. They're not being lazy. They're desperate. Why haven't you been working today? Can you go to the next slide? They replied, because no one hired us. Next one, please. The landowner told them, then go and join the others in my vineyard. Next one, please. That evening, he told his foreman to call the workers in and pay them, beginning with the last workers first. Well, that's a little odd, isn't it? When those hired first, so they've been working an hour to get their pay, they assumed they would, I have a typo in there. Don't look at that. Look at me. So the people who have been paid an hour come up to the manager or the person who's running the show, and after 1 hour of work, they get a full day's wage. Crazy, huh? They work 1 hour, they get a full denarius. And back he goes, the people have been working 3 hours, full day's wage. 5 hours, full day's wage. 7 hours, full day's wage. And he gets to the last group who've been there all day, sweating it out in the hot sun. And what do you think they're thinking? We've been here all day, we're gonna get way more than that, right? And he gives them the same amount. A fair wage for a fair amount of work that they agreed to at the beginning. And they say, what the heck? These people work, can you go back one? These people worked only 1 hour and yet you've paid them just as much as you paid us who worked all day in the scorching heat. You like that? in the scorching heat. We're the victims here, right? Next slide for me. He answered them, friends, I haven't been unfair. Did you agree to work all day for the usual wage? Take your money and go. I wanted to pay this last worker the same as you. Is it against the law for me to do what I want with my money? Should you be jealous because I am kind to others? Okay, the tone that you read those two sentences makes or breaks the story. One more, Chantel. And so those who are last now will be first. And those who are first will be last. Where does your brain go in this story? I'm doing the math on the hourly wage. Okay, you worked 1 hour and you made how much? I worked 9 hours and I made how much? Isn't it natural that our brain goes to comparison? How is that fair? How is it that somebody works 1 hour and gets paid the same amount as me who worked 9 hours in the scorching sun? Our brains are actually designed for comparison. Evolution seems to have selected for comparison because it was really helpful. Because think about this for a second. Let's just say we're back, you know, in the ancient days where we're hunter-gatherers, and we're going to go for a hunt, me and y'all. I am crap at throwing a spear. I literally cannot hit anything, doesn't matter what I do. But you, fantastic at throwing a spear. You can, like, nail something, like, at 100 yards. I don't know. Can you throw a spear 100 yards? Any spear throwers here? Okay, but you, though you can throw a spear really accurately and nail whatever you want, you know, an animal can literally walk across your feet and into the bush and you still can't figure out where it went. For me, you know, like I can track an animal across water, through the mountains, like no problem. So let's just say we decide we all need some food because we're living on a subsistence diet, right? Whatever we can kill, we eat. And you all are dependent on me and him going hunting. What do you think? Should I be throwing the spear? It's a pretty good idea, right? He should be tracking. We're all going to die. So our brains are designed to compare and say, no, you should be tracking, he should be throwing the spear. Then we'll eat. So comparison is actually a really healthy thing to adapt to society. We're not all the same, so figure out who's good at what, get them doing that, right? If you ever have a open heart surgery, do you want the best doctor or the doctor who just kind of made it by on talent or on good looks? We literally want our brains to compare and be like, yeah, no, you. You can cut me open and, you know, reattach my heart or whatever they do. Now, that comparison piece is really healthy in some places, but you add in social media. The ability to see every person in the best moment, totally photoshopped, totally filtered, to death. And what does your brain do? You are now at the bottom end of every comparison you've ever had. Our brains are in this weird state where the comparison mechanism that's so important to figure out that he can throw a spear and I can track is now getting messed up with all these other things we can compare to. So it makes sense that when we read this story, the first thing we're doing is comparing and saying, well, what's fair? That's not fair. I worked a long time. I worked 9 hours and you paid me the same as that person. It's like $100 an hour and I made like just over 10 bucks an hour. How is that fair? What would we probably do? We'd probably, you know, go to the union and file a grievance to itinerant workers in the ancient Near East, right? Right? That's what we'd all do, right? Think about if your job, you found out that your colleague who's been there the same amount of time as you, who has the same amount of experience as you, gets paid 50% more than you do. What are you feeling? It's brutal, yeah, pissed. A job that you might have really enjoyed, now you're hating it. So when we read the story, our first blush of it, conventional wisdom says, this is a story about fairness, and that's unfair. Right? And then the landowner kind of sounds pissy. Well, I get to do whatever I want with my money. You can't tell me what to do with my money. But let me go and tell the story from a different point of view. Think about yourself not as the first person hired, but the last person hired. You got up in the morning, you kissed your partner goodnight or goodbye. You tucked your kids in a little bit tighter so they stay warm. Sun's not even out yet, and you walked to town. And you stood in the corner, hoping, praying for work. You know you have about one day left of food for your family. If this doesn't go well, things are going to get bad. And so you stand in the corner, waiting for someone to come and hire you. First thing in the morning rolls around. You find out that someone got hired on another corner, and so you run over to the other corner, but by the time you're there, everyone's gone. All day as you go, things just getting worse and worse. Your feeling of like, we are not going to eat this week, is taking over. And the story isn't just an ancient Near East story. We felt it, right? Sometimes it's financial, you know. Right now in Calgary's climate, the unemployment rate's stupid. But what about that person who's alone and wants to be with someone else? And they put up a post on social media or on dating sites and no one reaches out to them. As time goes, they're getting more and more desperate. You apply to get in a new program at school and you don't hear back. Or you hear back that you didn't make it, apply again next year, right? It's that feeling that we're going, I'm starting to get desperate now. I need something to happen. And so we're standing on the corner waiting for someone to come and hire us in this story. And as the time goes, it's getting worse and worse. Think about it. You know, 1 hour in, you're like, well, I'll still get hired. By noon, you're starting to get a little bit freaked out. By an hour to close, you're losing it. There is no way your family's eating. Like, you're in trouble now. To me, that desperation. It's me sitting on the side of the road, right? I need help. I need somebody. And it's into that space that the landowner walks and says, you, come with me. I got a job for you. And already you're doing the math in your head thinking, well, okay, if one full day's work is worth about 4 days of food and I'm going to get about 1/9, they didn't do math back in those days, but just bear with me. Let's say they did. You know, you're going, well, we could maybe buy enough food for half a day and maybe I'll buy a little bit more time. When the house owner says, okay, everyone line up. And the manager walks up to you and says, here's a full day's wage for the hour that you just did. What are you feeling? It's one of those moments where I can't even speak. Do you know what this means to my family? Suddenly the story has a different feeling, doesn't it? It's a story about someone coming and helping someone who is so desperate for help. It's our story, right? It's when someone comes up to us and says, hey, you need a ride? Our partner reaches over to us and gives us a hug because we've been distant lately, and they take the first step. It's the job offer that says, hey, I got a job for you and it's going to be perfect. Suddenly this story has a different feeling, doesn't it? Now, let me tell you the story from one more perspective. I started off by getting you guys to think about yourself as well. Our brains naturally go to the unfair party, the victim, right? I asked you to move into the story of the person who had been waiting all day, desperate to get work, and then finds out he gets a full day's wage and he can feed his family. What about, think of yourself as a landowner now. Now, the way they said landowner, it's technically householder would make more sense of the translation. Someone just like you. The translator landowner makes it seem like they're richy rich, right? No, but there's a sense to the story that this is a person who's been in your shoes. They've struggled, they've needed. And now they're on the other side. And so you get up in the morning, and instead of sending your hired hand to go get help, you want to do it. Because you know how much this means when you've been sitting on the corner and needed help. So you go into town, and you find someone and say, hey, look, I need your help. Fair wage, fair for work? Yeah, totally. And then after coffee break, you go back into town, and you see some more people, and something shifts in you because you've been there. You've been desperate for help. And so when you see that other person, you actually see yourself and you say, you, come. I'll pay you something fair. We'll figure it out. Time and time again during the day, you see people who are in desperate need of help. And you say, you, come with me. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. It'll be fair. Don't worry. You see, we all have moments in our world where we're the person who can help. And I think this story is asking us to do something different because the story starts with fairness, right? Fair wage, fair work. That's the minimum. But you've been on the other end of this thing. You've felt that need. You've been desperate for someone to help you. You've been on the side of the road covered in coolant going, oh, bloody hell. And so at the end of the day, in an attempt to try and make the world the way you want it, you say, bring everyone in, and I want to pay the person who has only worked an hour, I want to pay them first. Because I know them. We've been them. And it doesn't matter that they've been unemployed till the end, they still have need. They have a family. They have kids. Minimum, I'll pay them a fair wage. But what they need is a full day's wage, don't they? And so instead of saying, what's best for me? How do I make this so I have to pay them the least amount of money? You say, no. Pay them a full wage. Let them feed their family for a couple days. It's not, pardon my French, but an asshole move to show that someone's being unfair or someone's not being fair. I don't think that's how the story reads. I think what it is it's saying, look, isn't this the way we want to be more than fair? Fair would have been, you worked an hour, you get an hourly wage, right? More than fair says, actually, you know what? I'm going to give you more than what you deserve because I see your need. And so your attempt to pay them in the order you did is an attempt to say, what if we lived life differently? Fair, that's minimum standard. But what if we're more than fair? Think about your life right now. Where could you be more than fair? Who in your life could you reach out to? Not because they've earned it. That's fair, right? Where's the more than fair? I think that's what this story is about. It's a call to say, fair, fair's fair. That's conventional wisdom, and it's beautiful. That's minimum standard, right? Keep talking. Fair wage for fair work. But how do we, as people in the spiritual path, find something that's more than fair? To give when someone can't give you back. So a couple hours later, I called the tow truck. I paid him. He towed me. Fair, he charged a lot of money, so I'm not sure that was completely fair. I was like, sorry, what? It's like 10 blocks. But it's fair, right? As I sat there, first thing, covered in coolant, licking poison, this coolant off my lips, A guy swerves out of traffic into the thing, comes running back. Old guy, big, overweight, and he's running back with a fire extinguisher. It's more than fair, is it? There's nothing I can do to say thank you. I didn't earn it. I never know that guy. If he's listening to this podcast, dude, you are the man. That's what more than fair looks like, right? Let me end with three stories. I'm 16, all hormones and squeaky voice, big ass hair, and I have a date. So I asked my dad, Dad, can I borrow the car? Yeah. So I jump in this like crappy big red station wagon family car, right? To go pick up my girlfriend. And I am like, started the car, put it in reverse, hit the gas, bam! I might have forgotten to open the garage door. The back of the car is now through the garage door. Oops. You know, I put it into park and you hear it like scraping as it's pulling itself out of the door. My dad comes flying out the door because of course he hears it, right? He says, okay. He goes to the garage and kind of pushes boards back in place so that it can open. And he says, have a good night. I don't even know what to say. I'm like, I'm so sorry, Dad. And he's like, no, have a good date. Fair would have been, Vince, fix the garage door. More than fair says, have a good date, son. Did a message a while ago on reciprocity. I think all relationships that are healthy should be at least win-win. They should be fair. And I got an email from someone in our community and said, Vince, you're not getting relationships. This is how relationships work. I was going home after just a normal day, nothing happened, nothing special. And I remembered my husband's favorite donut shop is about 20 minutes out of my way at a farmer's market. So I pulled out of traffic, cut across town, parked the car, walked and fight the crowd, bought him a donut, and brought it home. She said, Vince, that's what makes a relationship. And isn't that more than fair? Heard a story this week. A guy's at his dad's funeral, grieving. And he's kind of walking down the aisle and someone comes up behind him and grabs him in this big bear hug. And he turns around and he doesn't even know the guy. He's kind of like, get off me? Who are you and why are you crashing my dad's funeral? The guy said, yeah, you don't know me, but I know your dad. You see, a bunch of years ago, I was going to school, and I was so dirt poor. I was working three jobs to try and pay for my tuition. I couldn't even afford a bus ticket to go back to see my family for the holidays. It was everything I could do to just stay in school and eat ramen noodles. And so I walked out to the highway, put my thumb out, and your dad pulled over and picked me up. Started to talk. You know, normal stuff. But your dad didn't let it go. He's like, how you doing? I remember his dad doesn't know. He's picked up a hitchhiker. How you doing? The kid starts talking. Well, school, three jobs, money's tight. He said, what you don't know about your dad is after that, your dad paid the next 3 years of tuition for me. I knew your dad. And your dad was more than fair. Way more than fair. So on this Thanksgiving weekend, let me ask you this. Fair, of course. Fair, that's minimum. But where can you be more than fair? Who do you need to reach out to? Because they need you to. Who do you need to invite to the table? Who do you need to stop for? Where can you be more than fair? I don't know about you, but this story kicks me in the gut and says, Vince, there's more to this world than just fair. I hope you can hear it too. Come back next week. Jeff's going to talk a little bit about, what did he tell me he was going to talk about? Everything happens for a reason. Ooh. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We'll see you next week.